Thanks, Jackie. Our next speaker is Kim Pate, and Kim is the Executive Director of Elizabeth Frey. And you may have, I'm sure many of you know a lot of Kim's work. I'm just going to mention one that I think is really connected to what we're talking about. And Kim was involved in intervening in the Kimberly Rogers case in Ontario. And she'll tell us a bit about that and about the work that she's doing now on the issue of criminalization and women's poverty. Kim?
Thanks. I want to thank Rape Relief for organizing this, and I want to acknowledge the traditional land as well as the building we're meeting in, but the traditional land of the Aboriginal people of this unceded territory. I also want to say that I think it's really, really vitally important that this discussion is happening here now at a time when many of us are vibrating between absolute rage and absolute despair. And I think, you know, I'm hoping we'll tap into somewhere in between that, the action that we can move on to. One of the things that I wanted to talk of, I'm not going to talk as much, I was going to talk a bit about some of the background of why many of us do this work, but I think you've had some really excellent and important and far better examples. What I want to talk a bit about is what's happening as we're trying to do some of this work and what some of the challenges I think we're seeing. And I will talk a tiny bit about Kim Rogers, but I think I'll, if there's questions, I'll happily answer some of those after. I think what's increasingly happening, and many of us have been talking about this, is as you get squeezed more and more, we all become more focused on just trying to survive, whether it's individually as you're trying to survive just to deal day to day. Organizationally, we're seeing it. Organizations are falling away around us, and we're trying to, you know, hang on to what little bit of movement we can see or what little bit of connection we can find. I think we need to strengthen all of those ties because I think we're at risk of losing much, much more in many ways for many generations to come, and I think we need to hang on to that. We need to be really challenging what we're doing when we're taking the paychecks. If we're not putting those paychecks at risk, then we need to be challenging whether we're entitled to them. And I think, at least at this at a conference of rape crisis and shelter workers, and many of us have been starting to say it in other sectors as well, that we need to be, if we're getting paychecks now, then we're deluding ourselves if we don't think those are at risk anyway. And if we're not putting them purposefully at risk to try and challenge the inadequacy of supports, of assistance for everybody else, then we're not, I think we have to challenge whether we're even entitled to them. And I think we also, one of the things we've tried to do in the last little while in our organization nationally, the National Association, is in recognition, some of you who've known of the work we've been doing for some time will know of us as having worked with women in conflict with the law. That was the historically what we talked about. We've now changed that, and it's not just semantics to say we work with criminalized women. It was to clearly signal to everybody, the government, when we're dealing with them, the people in the community, the women we're working with directly who are being criminalized, that it's increasingly the laws and policies of this land that are causing people to be criminalized, not that people are actually thinking, making choices, deliberately planning to go and do something that would cause them to be charged, convicted, sentenced, and therefore criminalized. And so one of the things I think we need to be challenging is what is being criminalized and why is it? You've heard mention already about the fact that we're seeing an increased feminization of poverty, that it's clear the gender impact, it's clear the race impact, it's clear the impact on people with disabilities. We just keep going in terms of anybody who has any, the further you are from the majority that, or the minority that has the greatest degree of privilege, the more likely it is that you're feeling these changes in the most profound ways. And so when we, it's not a surprise then that not just in Canada, not just in this province, but worldwide, the fastest growing prison populations right now, and even though numbers of overall people who are being criminalized in some areas is going down, the fastest growing prison population worldwide is women. Next is children. Now, that's directly linked to economic policies, social policies, health policies, education policies. You get the picture. We're very clearly seeing that as we dismantle the very structures that provide opportunities for people to not be in poverty, to have the privilege of education, to have opportunities, to have supports for health care, particularly when we're talking about women, mental health care, but also for men. The report just done by Human Rights Watch International in the States, which of course we're chasing rapidly. We're trying to follow every American policy, it seems. That's where the cuts to welfare came from. That's where the notions of no guaranteed, no income came from, where the notion of boots, pulling yourself up by the bootstraps, whether or not you have any boots, came from. And what we're seeing there is, and what their most recent report of Human Rights Watch International showed, is that there are more people with mental illness or mental health diagnoses, with mental disabilities in prison than there are in any of the mental health institutions. What we're seeing is that if you're Aboriginal, or again, look to any of the countries, the highest rate of the racialized Indigenous population, where they'll be most greatly represented will be in the prisons. In this country, it may surprise you to know that across the board, Aboriginal women are now 30% of the federal jail population, so the longest sentences. They're 1 to 2% of the overall population. If you go to the prairies, they're now 65% to 95%, depending on when, which province, what type of sentence they're serving. And once they're there, their very active survival to still be fighting at that stage will mean that they're most likely to have been labeled hard to manage, and therefore a higher security, and therefore placed in the highest degree of isolation, therefore serving the longest sentences, and they're the most likely to be kept in till the end of their sentence, and are the least likely to have community supervision once they're released and supports. We're also seeing the backlash to violence against women, the very important work that's been done over the years. I don't need to tell anybody here, I'm sure, about the numbers of women who now, when they call the police, end up charged themselves, who give the statements when the men may not, who then the lawyers may mount an argument that the man must have been defending himself as well. And we're seeing increased numbers of women now coming in, countercharged, or increasingly, the last couple of years, only the ones charged in those sorts of situations where it's clear that they're trying to defend themselves. We're also seeing, because of the risk, the inability to actually leave those situations, women starting to not even call the police and actively saying that as a strategy. I don't think we can, any of us, live with the reality of women not feeling any means of protection from that kind of violence. So we're seeing, you know, amongst the women being the fastest growing prison population, we're also seeing a feminization of the criminalization. What I mean by that is when we've argued that we shouldn't be picking up women for prostitution when, as Jackie's given the example, they're increasingly on the street selling their bodies to make the rent, to pay for food, to cope. We've had responses, oh, don't worry, we won't charge with soliciting anymore. But guess what we're starting to see now is increased numbers of women being charged with living off the avails of prostitution where they may be working together and pooling their resources. Increased numbers of women being charged with pimping. We've had 12 and 13-year-old girls who are trying to survive together, living in what can best be described as the most rundown of hotel rooms, being described as pimping each other when they take turns being the ones that have to work. We've had increased numbers of women also being charged with drug trafficking and importation when they're trying to make a bit of money to last through another month or 2 months. And we're seeing them clearly being targeted when in fact we've had situations where there may be 5 or 6 women hired by the same individual to carry drugs across the border and then directly fingered by the very person who hired them so that the one who's carrying the harder drug or the more expensive drug can perhaps get through. So we're seeing all those kinds of trends as well. We saw in Kim Rogers that you can be now criminalized because you try and get a leg up and get out of there. Many people think it was because she took money she wasn't entitled to above and beyond welfare. That's not accurate. Her reason for being criminalized in Ontario was because it's now no longer welfare in Ontario. It's called Ontario Works. And if you're not actively looking for work, you're not entitled unless you get a special disability dispensation. In her case, she was going to school because she had an injury. Had she applied, she would have been entitled to the disability, but she didn't know that. So she went to school, and that was her fraud. That was the Ontario Works fraud that she was convicted of. We've just had a rollback of the ban, and one of the debates that's happening right across this country is happening right now in meetings that people are having, is whether, in fact, the right to welfare includes adequacy of rates. Rates across this country are criminally low. Where the criminalization should be happening is not the people attempting to survive welfare, but if anybody should be criminalized, it should be those implementing the policies. Many of us talked about... During the Kim Rogers inquest, what we weren't allowed to ask was why weren't any of those responsible for the decisions made in her case held accountable? Phalanxes of lawyers came out when the lawyers were on the stand, when the government policy people were on the stand, and when the actual community workers, three of the four of whom were out of work by the time the inquest rolled around, were all women. We're volunteering in the community. Virtually no one was there. It wasn't of interest to the community, apparently. And one of the questions we tried to ask is why don't we? Imagine for a minute, and I think some of the things we do need to imagine is what it would look like if we chose to criminalize different things, if we chose to not criminalize the least privileged. And, you know, what if we criminalize those responsible for the development of harmful policies? What if we criminalize those who are legally responsible for human and social costs that criminalize, that make more vulnerable the most marginalized? What if we said, for instance, we would examine those areas where the costs are far greater, human costs and social costs? We tried to do this in Kim Rogers and we weren't allowed to because it was seen as not relevant to her death. Tell me that it's not relevant that when you have tax evasion and we don't even call it fraud, that we don't pursue those. What we found out was apparently, in most cases, unless it's over $200,000 of tax evasion, they don't look to criminal charges. Imagine what you have to make to have $200,000 of tax fraud. OHIP, or Ontario Health Insurance, overbilling. It's not fraud if the doctors are doing it. What about, and legal aid? I mean, not that I... we didn't even get numbers on that. GST fraud, you get the picture. So one of the things we've talked about is what about if we did try to look at some other ways of identifying what should be criminalized? What if we said that we needed to criminalize those who took advantage of public space, public position, and abused their power, lied while they ran for office, abused public monies, misused public monies? What if we were instead anybody who made excess profits should be criminalized? What if we said anybody who hoarded natural resources should be criminalized? What if we said anybody responsible for interfering with natural resources should be criminalized? I mean, you can see that there's a whole different way that we could re-examine. Law is a theory. What we choose to identify as legal or illegal, as criminal or not criminal, is completely dependent upon who it's focused on, who it benefits, and who stands to lose or gain from that. So you can think of any behavior, and it will be seen as criminal in some contexts and not criminal in others. If you want to challenge me on that, please do at the end. I'm happy. I love that game. And the whip. So where do we go from here? I think we do have to start to challenge what is being criminalized, who's benefiting from what's being criminalized, and why, in whose interest it is that we don't have guaranteed annual income, in whose interest it is that we don't have guaranteed health care, in whose interest it is that we don't have adequate resources for all children to be fed. In whose interest is it that we then band-aid those with homelessness strategies? In whose interest is it that we then band-aid it with a crime prevention strategy? In whose interest is it that we do all of those sorts of things? And instead of directly saying, yes, in this country, every child, every person will be entitled to eat, will be entitled to have a place to live, will be entitled to have the greatest opportunity to learn and grow, will be entitled to have the best health care available to ensure that they're healthy not after they get sick, that they're not helped and band-aided after they get sick, but that they have the greatest opportunities. And I think there are many, many possibilities about what we could be doing, and I think we need to start thinking about how we do, as Lee said, become so troublesome, unmanageable. I mean, many of us have talked about we need some more, you know, general strikes in this country. We need people rising up. We need to...
Okay. We could form the General Strike Committee tonight. That would be okay.